Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something. I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Doc Staples, and wow. Wow. Not a whole lot more to say than wow after what we all witnessed on Saturday against Louisville. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I was not surprised that Louisville won that game. I'd mentioned on this podcast even in the off season that I thought the Louisville game was probably the most dangerous on the schedule for Florida State, and especially because Lamar Jackson, as a Vic-type quarterback, if he got hot, they could pile up some points and potentially put Florida State too far behind to be able to come back. But there's no way. I did not foresee a 43-point demolition that could have been worse had Louisville played their starters for the last 10 minutes of the fourth quarter. That was a pretty embarrassing performance. One of the biggest losses. I mean, certainly the biggest loss in Jimbo Fisher's tenure at Florida State. I mean, it's not there's nothing else that's even close. I mean, you could look at the Oregon game with the five turnovers in the college football playoff. That was a bad loss, but that also was, you know, a quality team that had made the playoff and just wound up sort of getting just turning the ball over too much. You could argue for the OU game and Jimbo's first year as the head coach, but that Florida State team didn't have the talent on the roster really to be competitive with that OU team, particularly once Christian Ponder got hurt on the second drive of that game after the offense marched down the field to score a touchdown on that first drive. Ponder got hurt, and that was it. In that game, Florida State got whitewashed. But this one was by far, I think, the worst loss in Jimbo's tenure at Florida State against a Florida State team that may be the most talented overall roster that Fisher's had, including even the 2013 team. Granted, this is a younger team overall than the 2013 team was. But when you look at the number of players on that team, this team is loaded. Now, granted, yes, two of the best defensive players, arguably the two most talented defensive players, really didn't play in this game. You didn't have Derwin James, and then Josh Sweat tried to give it a go, and then didn't really play meaningful snaps in this game. Yes, those guys didn't play, but with the depth of roster that Florida State has, with the talent on that field, for them to get dominated in all three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, Louisville dominated Florida State. They out-hit Florida State. They outsmarted Florida State. They returned a punt for a touchdown and another that was nearly for a touchdown. You know, they won in all three phases. That kind of demolition is something that we've not seen in the Jimbo Fisher tenure. And I think was just a total shock in the way that this Florida State team came out on Saturday. I mean, I've been at a loss all weekend to really explain how Florida State came into this game so incredibly unprepared. Because that's what that was. That Florida State team was unprepared. And you can bet that coaching staff, starting with Jimbo Fisher, they're saying the same thing behind closed doors. They're saying, you know, we were unprepared. How are we so unprepared? And they're reevaluating, they're self-scouting and doing all the things that you've got to do after you take stock of this kind of loss. And this is the kind of loss that forces you to take stock. You have to reconsider what you're going to do or what you are doing as a program when this sort of thing happens. When you go into one of the bigger games of your season and you come out 43 points on the wrong end, you got to go back and reevaluate a whole lot of things. You got to go back and evaluate the motivation of your players. You got to evaluate every system, every play call, that's just what you do. You have to take stock and say, okay, let's strip down and figure out what we can do to get back to the kind of success that we had before. What are we not doing? What is it that has changed to put us in a different spot? That's what you got to do. Now, as for me, I mean, after thinking about this over the course of the weekend, I've got a few things that I'm just going to kind of go through in this podcast. That these are my thoughts on sort of on where things stand as a program, and some of the things that I've had questions about previously that I think this game further exposed. So we'll start really from a larger program level, from a larger team level, and then work our way down into the various units. The first thing that comes to my mind here, and you know, I've mentioned it before, just about previous teams, certainly the 2014 team, less so the 2015 team, but I think there's still a larger trend at play here. But ultimately, there's no way around it. Florida State is soft. The team that played Louisville and the team that started the game against Ole Miss, the team that played against Houston, the team that even if you go back to the Florida game at the end of last year, Florida out-hit Florida State for most of that game. There were times when they came up and they hit Florida State and it was like, wow, they really, you know, Neal and some of those guys in the secondary and the linebackers, they came up, and when they hit Florida State was the one, they were the ones going backwards. It's just that Florida State was the more talented and skilled team and ultimately dominated that Florida team that had no quarterback and really was hot garbage at that point of the year on offense. But Florida State didn't out-hit Florida in that game either. And really, you know, I've wondered this for a while, but I mean, when was the last time that it was obvious that Florida State just out-hit a team from the opening whistle? Think about that. When was the last time that Florida State came out and you just saw them outright dominate, out-hit an opponent, a decent opponent? Let's put that out there. Out-hit and just out-physical a good opponent, a quality opponent, say a top 10 or a top 15 team. When was the last time that Florida State just went out and out-hit one of those teams? It's been a while. And the game that probably exposed this the most to me was actually the bowl game against Houston. Now, you know, at that point you could kind of credit that maybe to Florida State being checked out. There were a number of things that you could look at. And obviously Florida State played without their starting quarterback for, you know, about a quarter, and then he came back and played in a broken ankle. So I mean, a lot of things weren't sort of as they should be in that game. But the other thing that I noticed is that Houston came in and they were the aggressors. They out-hit and out-physicaled Florida State in that game, and that was surprising to me. It was, I think, maybe more noticeable in person. So I was then interested to see what Houston would do against OU at the beginning of this year, against a motivated OU, obviously, beginning first game of the year, one that was, you know, that had just watched the tape of Florida State getting out-hit and out-physicaled. And I wanted to see what happened there. And Houston came out and they hit OU the same way. They out-hit OU. When was the last time Florida State came out and did the same thing? It's been a while. And I've wondered for a while, and I've talked to some people within the program. Actually, as I know, I've talked to Vic Valori about this, and I think actually a while back I talked to Jimbo Fisher. I asked the same question of Jimbo Fisher a while back about whether the team, the GPS approach that, that the program has taken since its trial run in 2012 is making this team less physical, a little softer overall. Whether, you know, that's cost some of the physical edge that, that top teams often have. Wondered it for a while. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that the GPS system helps teams stay healthy. I think Florida State generally has done a better job with that, and has, you know, I think it's overall a real positive for the sport. But at the end of the day, you have to hit and you have to play physical in practice. You have to tackle. You have to do that stuff in order to maintain a physical identity. And, you know, Houston under Tom Herman, they maybe hit too much. They take such an old school approach to we're going to hit, we're going to have that be a big part of our identity. They probably hit too much. A lot of their players are going to wind up getting ground up and they'll be spent by the time they have an opportunity to go to the next level. But I think you see the result in the mentality of that team on the field. And there is something about that old school approach where you learn to push beyond exhaustion, and you have to do that in off-season conditioning and in practices and so on, and your toughness is challenged. I mean, that was the you know, one of the part of the secret sauce of the Bowden era dynasty was mat drills. And I remember vividly going through mat drills. Really, it's the only thing of those months I have any recollection of, because it basically wrecked you. But I remember literally praying, God, don't let me die here, the first time I went through mat drills. Now, unfortunately, mat drills also did lead to the death of one of my fellow freshmen my freshman year a few sessions later. So, I mean, it's certainly nothing to joke about, and it's easy to cross the bridge from, you know, an old school approach where you challenge toughness and you push beyond exhaustion and you learn to cultivate that sense of physicality and toughness and nobody's going to outwork me kind of mentality. It's easy to cross that bridge to the water is weakness kind of approach. And that's something that I think is too far. And that, again, that's something that, you know, we didn't have water in those mat drill sessions. But at the same time, it's also easy to go too far and favor staying healthy too much, such that you don't become the physical team that you need to be. And I wonder whether or not, you know, I think the GPS system should be mandatory. I mean, at this point in FBS football, I think it's something that everybody should be using in FBS football. Everybody can afford it. And I think it's very good for the players. It keeps them healthier and so on. But while, you know, depending on how people are using it among those who do use it, and then the fact that, you know, not everybody does use it, and you've got, you know, those teams that do take a more physical approach and they're less concerned about their players' welfare in that regard, it may be a little bit of a disadvantage, you know, or at least it's a trade-off. You know, it's been presented as a you know, basically an unmitigated positive, because you get more concern for players, they generally stay healthier, you know they've got better futures because they get to the NFL with more tread left on their tires and all these things, and all those are positives, but there, you know, as with most things in life, there's a trade-off, and I wonder whether or not a little bit of the cost has been the toughness, the psyche of Florida State. Of, you know what, you're tired, and you're overly spent. So instead of making you sit out, I'm going to challenge you all that more, and I'm going to grind you up until you prove your toughness to me. Even if that's not necessarily the thing that's going to be best for you in terms of physically, it's not going to help you be faster. It's not going to help you necessarily do a lot of things better, but the mentality that you need to play with is going to be built in. I wonder whether or not there's been some cost there, and whether they need to reevaluate sort of where they've drawn some of those lines and reevaluate how they're using some of the numbers and some of those things to sort of readjust the art of it a little bit. Because I think it's important at this point. You do still. I think you can't go back from having the impact data and the GPS data and all that. But maybe you alter a little bit of how you use it, and sometimes you say, you know what? Well, he's at a point where we might give him a little time off, or we might step back, you know, in this particular session. But we're going to challenge him a little bit. Sometimes maybe you just need to do that. I don't know. In any case, beyond the general question, where you've got a Florida State team that's just not coming in and out-hitting teams from the opening whistle, which is just – that's something that, given the culture of the program that I knew, that I played in, that I was proud to be a part of, even though I wasn't very good myself, I was proud to be a part of that and still am proud that I was a part of that. That's something that, you know, I don't see that identity – of being a physical and we work harder than you, we come in and we're gonna physically dominate you kind of mentality out there from the opening whistle. I'm just not seeing that, and I haven't seen it in a while. So getting to more specifics, I think the other thing that became obvious in this game is that Dalvin Cook is not healthy. Now, I said in the last podcast, you know, people were questioning whether Cook was as explosive and had the, you know, he doesn't have the same burst as last year. And I disagree. I said in the last podcast that he looked just as explosive and just as bursty to me as last year. And I think that's the case. I think that was the case in this game. I mean, when he got the ball on the edge, he turned the corner with so much ease and erased angles against UL. Easily. I mean, it was breathtaking, the burst that he showed on a couple plays when he didn't have any contact that he had to run through. He had every bit of the jets that he's shown in the past. But what is happening is he's definitely shying away from contact and is not running as aggressively through the line of scrimmage as last year. And that's where it looks like he doesn't have the same burst. It's when he's attacking the line of scrimmage and plants his foot to get through the hole. He's not trying to run through contact at this point. He's not running through the line of scrimmage with that kind of burst. And I think that's because he's avoiding contact to that right shoulder, the shoulder he had shoulder surgery on in the offseason. I think he's trying to avoid taking a whole lot of contact on that. I think he's just not healthy there. And I think that's even more evident by how poor he was against Louisville when pass protecting. And that's what really gave it away to me. Is he did everything he could to avoid taking contact at different points when pass protecting. I mean, he tried to do some things, took some lazy approaches to pass protection that he hasn't done previously. And actually, you know, against Ole Miss, he protected better. But I wonder whether or not he actually dinged that shoulder a little bit against Ole Miss in pass protection, perhaps. And that's something, you know, we may want to go back and take a look and see if we can locate where that is. But Bud Elliott actually just posted today a photo of Dalvin getting shoulder treatment in the training room of the kind that you only get if it is a significant issue. And as crazy as it sounds, you know, Jaquez Patrick ran better on Saturday. He made the offensive line look better than it did when Dalvin Cook was on the field by hitting the crease with more authority. Now, I think, you know, Louisville keyed on Dalvin a little bit more, which, you know, made a difference. But Patrick he ran like the better running back on Saturday, which is something I just never expected coming into this year. I mean, that completely changes the complexion of this Florida State team if Dalvin Cook is not Dalvin Cook. I mean, that's what you came into the year depending on. In terms of that's what you're going to point to as Florida State's going to be really good because they've got Dalvin Cook. And having Dalvin Cook in the backfield makes life a lot easier for a young quarterback and an offensive line that's gelling and all of these pieces. Well, you know, if Cook's not Dalvin Cook, then that changes a lot. And that's what we saw on Saturday. And so, you know, the question is whether or not he can get that shoulder healthy, in any, you know, at all during the season, because you're constantly taking shots on a shoulder over the course of the season at the running back position. And if he can get it healthy, how soon? You know, how long would it take? How long will it take before Dalvin Cook is Dalvin Cook again? You have to wonder. And, you know, if he keeps being sort of half Dalvin, does that mean you just start giving more carries to Jacquez Patrick and trying to save Dalvin for specific things where, you know, maybe you can use that speed and so on, and he becomes more of a situational guy, which is crazy. But that's where we are at this point. Now, defensively, 63 points. And they could have scored 80 if they'd wanted to. Just jaw-dropping. But, you know, I think a lot of it boils down to Florida State defensively is trying to do too much. It sure looks like they're just trying to do too much. And that's something on the last podcast I said, you know, when I was evaluating this game and how do you have to go about defending Lamar Jackson, particularly without Dalvin Cook or without Derwin James on defense, what do you have to do? And my number one recommendation was you have to take the Thoreau route. Simplify and make sure guys can play fast and can respond and take good angles and trust your guys to just be better athletes than what they've got. And that is not what they did. Instead, what we saw is a defense that repeatedly struggled to get aligned, lots of pointing and trying to communicate assignments before the snap, guys that weren't lined up fully, guys that were out of alignment, lots of confusion, tons of busts, just straight busts. First drive, you got a guy that was completely, I mean, no one within 15 yards of him alone in the secondary. And, you know, fortunately for Florida State, although it didn't matter because they scored a few plays later on the same drive, Lamar Jackson airmailed him. But, you know, that was a harbinger of things to come in that game. And you have to wonder, I mean, what's going on here in terms of these players not being able to execute what they're being asked to do? And, you know, the rule of coaching, you know, one of the primary rules of coaching is it doesn't matter what you know as a coach. As a coach, it doesn't matter what I know. It matters what my players know and what they can execute. And at this point, you know, we know that the Florida State staff is a good staff with a lot of guys that know a lot of football, and they've got a ton of experience. But you're only as good a coach as what your players know. And right now, it really appears that there's a lot of Florida State players that really don't fully understand what is going on and what their responsibilities are, and they're a step slow because they're not playing sure. They don't fully grasp what they're being asked to do. And I think in the secondary, some of this is probably the result of so much cross training at multiple positions, where, you know, you got guys that again, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, you got guys that are taking reps at safety, corner, and star, and, you know, they're learning all of that. And in one sense, that's one way to make sure that, especially by the time a guy's an older guy, he understands the entire defense and can basically process things at a completely different level of understanding, because he not only understands what he's being asked to do at that moment, but he understands how he fits in the larger scheme. You know, at the end of the day, that can be the result of cross-training. But especially early on in a guy's career, it can be the opposite. It can be one of those things where a guy who's, you know, cross-training and learning multiple positions just can't keep any of it straight. It's sort of like learning multiple languages at once. I mean, when I took three languages at the same time back when I was at Florida State, there's a certain level of confusion sometimes that comes in when you're trying to remember something, your mind's tired, and you're going, dang, was that, I'm trying, no, that's not, okay, that's the wrong language. Okay, now I've got to do it this way. And now you're doing all of that under the pressure of the clock and, you know, being physically tired as well as mentally tired and trying to do this, responding to elite athletes on the other side. That's too much. And I think that to some degree, that's one of the things that's happened at this point. And they may need to just simplify a little bit more, particularly earlier in guys' careers, which, you know, limits what you can do in terms of flexibility, but it, you know, allows guys to just clear the mind and pray, and clear the mind and play. Well, and actually, you know, the way they were beaten against Louisville, prayer probably wouldn't have been a bad idea. But I just think it looks like so many guys on this team just have so too much overhead. There's just too much overhead. And at some point, you just have to clear your – let the guys have something that's simple enough that they can clear their minds and just play fast and focused. And that boils down to trusting your recruiting. You have to make sure that you trust your recruits to be able to execute the simple stuff that you're giving them better than whatever complex stuff they might have to think about. And, you know, I think you have to do on the tail end of this kind of beatdown is you have to decide that you're not going to ask anybody to do anything that they can't execute perfectly. So you pare down to the stuff that you can execute perfectly, and then and only then do you add more complexity. So if your guys can only execute man-free, and they can only execute that, then that's the only thing you play until they can execute that perfectly, and then you add, you know, cover two man, or you add, you know, some other, you know, you build on that with a few other things. I think that's what you have to do. And, you know, that with the kind of athletes that Florida State has on defense, you should be able to do that and still survive. I mean, heck, Mickey Andrews did survive, albeit in a different era, playing essentially jet robber for, you know, 80% of a lot of games. So, you know, jet robber man free essentially for 80% of a game, and you dominate because you've just got better players than them. And at some point you have to be willing to do that. And, you know, that's where, you know, not bringing some of the complex blitzes. I'm baffled when I see all the people on Twitter and on message boards and social media demanding that Florida State play a more comp. You know, I saw some people saying, oh, Florida State plays, you know, there are high schools out there that play more complex defensive schemes than Florida State. They need to, you know, step it up and play more complex stuff. And, you know, they need to bring more blitzes. What? It's the opposite. If anything, they're playing too complex for this group of players at the present. And they need to blitz less because they're bringing sophisticated, exotic blitz looks, and they're not doing it very well. So at some point, just bring four, go one gap, four man pressures, and turn your interior guy or turn your defensive line loose, and let your linebackers clean up, and say, you know, we're just gonna take that approach instead of doing all the sophisticated, more complex stuff defensively that they've been given a run. So, you know, the thing you have to do, you have to be able to execute perfectly before you're adding anything more. And that includes, I'm still baffled by Florida State's inability to execute simple banjo technique in the secondary. They've not been able to execute banjo technique consistently the last 3 years. It's unreal. It's maddening. And that's how, you know, the touchdown on the shallow cross that Herb Street pointed to McFadden on. That wasn't McFadden's fault. That was Herb Street got it wrong, inexplicably, actually. I mean, he should know better than that, and he certainly does. But, you know, you have the outside receiver. Banjo technique is just where you have an outside receiver release inside, and an inside receiver releases either vertical or outside. And all that happens is the two defensive backs, the one on the outside and the one on the inside, switch responsibilities. That way you don't get rubbed off of your route. So, you know, if you don't play banjo technique, then exactly what happened. Or, you know, it basically, you don't want to get to a position where the outside guy is having to run through the inside guy to chase his man. So you just do what you would do in basketball, and you switch. Simple banjo. And all you do when two guys line up is you look at each other as defensive backs, and you call banjo, banjo, banjo. And then you read the routes. You read the releases. It's not hard. It's not complex. High schools do it. Middle schools even do this. Herb Street got it wrong in his analysis. Florida State gets it wronger. I just can't understand why Florida State can't execute it when middle schools everywhere execute this. High schools everywhere execute this. I mean, you can go back to the 2014 Notre Dame game, where Florida State was very fortunate that a pick got called on that play, and it was the right call. But unfortunately for Notre Dame, they didn't need to do it because Florida State blew the banjo. They should have passed that off, and that should have been covered anyway. But they didn't, and it was wide open. And frankly, Notre Dame didn't have to set the pick because Florida State's so bad at the banjo switch. And they did. They repeatedly busted it again in this game, and I don't understand it. That's the sort of thing that is simple fundamentals that you've got to be able to execute before you try to do anything else. And I, you know, you go back to the drawing board and you say, we're going to play man, and we're going to play man with basic banjo principles. This is just simple fundamentals, the easiest stuff that every high school in the country does. And we're going to do this and we're going to execute it well. And then once we get that, we can move up. But it's unbelievable. Secondly, I think we've got a trend now about how Florida State has executed defensively against this type of quarterback and offense. You can go back to Oregon, you can go to Houston, and you can look at Louisville. And yes, the Florida State defense in each of those games had their moments, and particularly against Oregon and Houston in the first half, they held up all right. But ultimately, those defenses gave up some huge plays in the option game. And I think one of the problems that they've had is that they've committed to dual reading the option, slow playing it with the ends and linebackers. So basically what this means is instead of the traditional way of defending the option would have it, where you have assignment football and you say, okay, defensive end is assigned to the quarterback. The running back is the linebacker's guy. You know, you've got the safety is the force for, you know, if there's a pitch man or a bubble or whatever, you have that. That's one traditional way of handling the option. And there are problems with that because, okay, now, you know, if one of those guys misses or if the defense or if the offense happens to anticipate who you have responsible for a certain guy and blocks that guy and you don't pass it off perfectly, then that can be a big play. Nobody does it better than Paul Johnson at Georgia Tech, where Kelly coached. And so he understands exactly how dangerous that can be to take that just sort of simple assignment football approach to stopping the option. And that's true against the spread option. It's true against anybody. So the alternative is to do what a lot of NFL teams do and a lot of better defenses do. Alabama does a lot of this sort of thing as well. And that's to dual read it or slow play it with the ends and linebackers. And basically what that means is instead of allowing the quarterback to have a quick read, so, you know, if the end crashes down on the running back, then the quarterback gives. If the end doesn't crash down and keeps the shoulders square to wait for the quarterback, then the quarterback the quarterback keeps it if the end crashes down. If the end keeps the shoulders square and waits for the quarterback, then the quarterback gives, period. That's an easy read. Well, what you try to do with the slow playing is you muddy it. You muddy the read, and instead of it being a quick mesh exchange with the quarterback and the running back, you try to make it tough for the quarterback to decide what he's going to do. So the end and basically slow plays it, steps toward the mesh, but keeps the shoulders in a position where he can take either one. And then the idea is that he waits until the quarterback finally makes the decision and then pursues the one who actually winds up with the ball. So if the quarterback keeps it, then he tries to maintain enough outside leverage to at least force the quarterback to spill. Ideally, you've got a guy that's a good enough athlete that can actually get to the quarterback while still sort of covering the run to some degree. And what that'll and then the linebacker does the same thing. The linebacker waits and scrapes and waits until either the running back actually has it, and you know he knows the running back has it. Now he attacks. Or if the quarterback then keeps it, he then takes off to wherever the quarterback's going. So the idea then is that instead of the defense always being wrong at every step, you take the initiative back from the offense and you force the offense to read the defense, which is reading the offense. So the defense is actually, once again, the one left holding the chalk at the end of the day. And, you know, the quarterback has to make a decision not based on a read, but on, you know, whatever he chooses at that moment. So it could be wrong. So you wind up with some tackles for loss or so on. Problem is that you've got to have good enough athletes who are doing the reading to be able to move laterally and that sort of thing once the quarterback does either give or keep to be able to make those plays. And if you're up against a great athlete like a Lamar Jackson, sometimes that he can just beat the double read himself. And that's what Florida State ran into in this one. And that's one of the things that that they had problems with against Oregon, Houston, and Louisville as well, as those quarterbacks were patient and they just continued to ride the mesh, and wait for that slow playing player to either make a decision or get just enough out of position that the great athlete at quarterback could make a play. And honestly, in this game, what I think they really should have done is they should have, especially without Josh Sweat. See, Josh Sweat is such a good athlete, and he's so long that he could actually both compress against the run, so he would hold up. And when he slow plays, he actually is able to get in on a tackle on the running back or actually make a play on the quarterback that is about to escape. And you saw it last year a few times against Louisville. Jackson couldn't escape him in the backfield because of his length and his agility in the backfield. If you've got that guy, you can dual read it a little bit more. You can slow play it a little bit more. But with the personnel Florida State had, I think they really just needed to just go ahead and commit to taking Jackson away and say, defensive end, you're going to take the quarterback every time. And anytime it even looks like he potentially has it, we want you to hit him. Make Radcliffe and their running backs beat you. Just hit Jackson over and over and over again. Simplify it and let those guys play aggressively. And yeah, maybe you get busted a few times, but you can't let Jackson beat you. And that's what they did in this one. And, you know, when you've got DeMarcus Walker, who's not a lateral movement guy, being the one that's trying to slow play that, you're going to have problems. And the linebackers got into positions where they were between the running back or the quarterback. They couldn't really do it either way. So at some point, you've got to let them just be one or the other. Now, that said, this is the same defense that held Ole Miss to 75 total yards or whatever it was in the second half, that held Ole Miss to fewer points than Alabama did. Crazy. Crazy. That said, I do have to wonder how much impact Derwin James and Josh Sweat would have had in this game. I mean, it's hard to imagine that they would have been enough of a difference between the two of them to hold Louisville to 40 fewer points to give Florida State enough to potentially win the game. But who knows? I mean, Florida State did quit after Louisville scored 35. So, I mean, it's a good question to know whether or not they would have ever even gotten in that situation to give up those kinds of points to begin with. Because Derwin was really the key to the scheme. I mean, I already talked a little bit about how Sweat would have been really important in terms of his ability to slow play in the backfield and still make plays in the quarterback with his length and all that. But the real key was the ability to have an ace who could chase down Jackson in the open field and reduce space because of his athleticism. And you know, you talk about simplifying. Ultimately, I mean, Derwin, by his very presence, allows Florida State defensively to simplify. Because you can basically say, okay, we're having trouble with Jackson. Go ahead and just you spy him. You take Jackson, period, Derwin, which is a lot of what they did last year. And he can do that. I mean, he was able to handle Lamar Jackson in the open field last year. And, you know, Sweat slow plays in the backfield better than anyone else on the FSU roster not named Derwin. So, I mean, you wonder what kind of impact they would have had in this game. But either way, Florida State quit after Louisville scored 35. And, I'm not accustomed to seeing a Florida State team quit. It's just not in the DNA of the unconquered Florida State kind of approach. Not what I'm familiar with. But in any case, I think Florida State needs to evaluate how complex they are on defense and particularly against this kind of attack and evaluate whether they want to stick with quite as check heavy a defense to try to keep the chalk in the defensive coordinator's hands as long, particularly against this kind of spread attack, instead of just saying, you know what, we're going to get our guys quick calls, make sure that they can line up and they know their assignments and they're confident in those and they can play fast. And I think really the latter is what they're going to need to do, at least until they're more confident that these guys can consistently execute their assignments. Now, just a little bit more time. I'm gonna blaze through a little bit about the offense. The offense wasn't a whole lot better than the defense in this one. They only managed 10 points in non-garbage time, which is just ridiculous. But, you know, the issues there, I think, are things that are more easily fixable, and some of it's going to just grow, and some of it they'll grow out of. Some of it's a little bit more concerning. The offensive line was not good. The right side's still a mess, but Dickerson's going to be really, really good. He's a true freshman, you know, second start on the road. He busted some protection calls. I wonder actually a couple times whether those were the right protection calls. You've got a redshirt freshman quarterback, and I wonder whether there was, you know, some of the protection calls might not have been right. But either way, he, you know, had some busts there that allowed some free rushers to come up the middle on some blitzes. But the real issue is at right tackle. Leonard has not been good, and right tackle is still a problem. And, you know, until they can get that fixed, they're going to have continued issues there. And Cook's injury and tentativeness has magnified those issues. Last year, he ran through creases like the ones he had against Louisville this year. But he's not running through those this year. As for the passing game, wide receivers were open. The post-dig combo, there were a couple of long drops where Francois got sacked or, you know, took pressure. And they had a post-dig combo that was open downfield, and he's just got to be willing to pull the trigger. And, you know, people, again, there, some of the people out there are saying, well, you know, unless it's Jameis, you can't do that in Jimbo's offense. You know, obviously you've got such complexity. Listen, the post-dig combo is one of the easiest things to read in football. It's one of the things that, you know, you saw Spurrier's Florida teams do for years. It's one of the things that Petrino's offense uses as much as anyone. And Francois missed it a couple times on deep drops and just never got rid of the football. And I think, you know, that's where you got a young guy who the game is still moving a little bit fast. And it was pretty obvious the game was moving at warp speed once Florida State fell behind and was struggling to protect him. You could see it on his face. But, he, you know, the reads just weren't being made. I think eventually that's gonna work itself out with some experience. And again, that was a concern going into the season. I mean, in one of my preseason previews, one of the things that I'd mentioned was there was some concern about how Francois would handle certain things like this, particularly in the early going, and whether or not he would be able to address some of those issues, you know, in terms of getting the ball out late. And then, you know, if he didn't, whether or not he would rat trap, as it were, or, you know, basically get to a point where he could free his mind again and play loose, and that wasn't the case here. I thought Ole Miss had answered that question with the way that he responded to adversity in that game, but that didn't happen here. So, I mean, it's just the kind of variance you're going to get with a really young guy sometimes. And no, again, Florida State's offense is not so complex that only a Jameis Winston can, you know, succeed at quarterback. That's ridiculous. I mean, heck, Petrino's offense is probably the most similar to Fisher's structurally of any coordinator in the country. And they didn't have those issues today, or that is on Saturday. They didn't have those issues with a second-year starter. Now, actually, last year when Lamar Jackson was a first-year starter, he did have a lot of those problems until the very end of the year. So, you know, at some point, your quarterbacks have to grow into the game and let it slow down. And I think that's going to happen for Francois. It's just a matter of making sure that, once again, you're putting guys in position to be able to succeed in the present. And you got to balance that with what you're going to need for the future. And you know, I think, again, they'll be able to evaluate some of those things moving forward. But the other thing is that the offense has to regain its physicality and the edge that top teams play with. And again, they're not there. But I think that's true for this program as a whole right now. And that's where, you know, this is a soul-searching week for Florida State and for that program. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what they wind up doing. We'll see what changes get made if they decide to make changes. And they should make some changes. But they've got to find solutions. They've got to get some things cleaned up on the offensive line. They've got to simplify and clean up assignments in the secondary. They've got to turn the defensive front loose a little bit more. I mean, they've got to play downhill more defensively. There's so much where they're playing on their heels. And they've got to play downhill more. They've got to find ways to get that defense playing downhill more. They did it against Ole Miss in the second half. They've got to self-scout a little bit and see what's going to work best to do that. Hard to believe that this is the same team in the second half against Ole Miss that laid waste to a team that almost beat Bama this weekend. But this team, nonetheless, probably blew any shot at the playoff with this game. I mean, playoff teams don't get beat by 43 points by anyone. But this team can still have a quality year. This team still theoretically could win out. There's enough talent on the roster if they mature and if, you know, certain corrections are made, that they could do that. But it's gonna take quite a bit, and it's gonna take a lot of changes, and it's gonna take a lot of growing up. Well, that's gonna do it for us here. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. We'll be back later in the week with a little bit more analysis and a preview of the matchup against South Florida. Once again, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Of course, make sure to catch the next podcast. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.